Thank you for your welcome, Robert.
Just before I came out, I got a couple of emails or Facebook messages, actually one from a mum who had hoped to be here tonight, but she was saying that her daughter or son, I think it was experiencing some sleep problems, so couldn't come. And her friend had also been hoping to come, but her daughter was experiencing some teething problems. So that's, I suppose that's just the nature of who we're dealing with. So what a pity that they couldn't make it. What causes us to stress about parenting? Oops. So what happens when this little baby boy appears, full of joy and giggles and laughter, and then we end up with this, screaming, tantrums, resisting all attempts to correct them? In my work, I have seen a lot of stressed parents down through the years. And these are some of the causes, the things that really, I suppose, cause parents to be stressed. So it could be friendship issues. It could be that in school there are friendship issues. It could be that there are maybe exams or the pressure for exams for some children. Temper tantrums, maybe mum's too busy, dad's too busy because just their work-life balance hasn't just got sorted out, and so they've got this child who's maybe not sleeping or who's screaming, who wants to watch television or whatever it is. So that's just another thing on top of their already busy day. Poverty. Some parents that I've visited have been struggling to put oil in the oil tank just to heat their home. Anxiety, which is probably the thing that I'm finding, it's the issue that I'm finding, it's coming up more and more for children at the moment. So I would have children at the minute coming because they're very anxious. They can't sleep in their own bed at night. They don't want to go into their own bed. They don't want to go in because it's dark. They don't want to go in because they think that there's somebody waiting for them to jump on them. A little girl I had who was 13, and she was finding difficulty even going into the toilet in her school. So she was holding that in all day until she got home. She wouldn't go up to bed at night until her 16-year-old sister would come in. So these are just some of the issues. Parents would say, my son is hyper, I cannot get him to calm down. Or she just won't eat, I can't get her to eat. What am I going to do? Or she won't listen to me. Maybe a child who's got a little bit older, a teenager, and they're just not listening to their parents. Or for some children it is trauma, it's even more serious than that. Because maybe that child had a dad who died in a motorbike accident. Or I had one dad, or one little boy, and his dad passed away while he and his daughter were out camping with their dad. The wee boy was 5 at the time. So you can imagine the trauma that there was, and so the behavior then that he had as he dealt with that or tried to deal with that. A 10-year-old who was self-harming, he couldn't bear to have anyone looking at him. When he would go to do his school assembly, when he would go to do just his leaving assembly in P7, or when he was doing a CPR exam, that whole weekend he cut himself about 8 cuts with a blade all the way down his arm, because the pain of that was easier than the pain that was in his head. So a 13-year-old who was hitting his mum when his mum does not do what she's told. So, you know, that is a very serious thing for a mum who was in a car and the son was hitting her. So you can imagine just the stress that she was under. And for some parents, I just worry in case they get involved in something. So tonight, I don't really know who you are. I don't really know what age your children are, but perhaps some of the things that I'm mentioning here resonate with you. Maybe you're feeling under pressure and quite stressed about something with your children. The fact you're here tonight, though, speaks volumes for me about how much you care for your child. or your children. And hopefully I can give you some pointers to alleviate some of that stress. I want to just say at the outset that I am not an expert in parenting. I have a lot of experience in working with families and parents and directly with children and young people. I've read a lot about parenting. It is a subject that I am very interested in and always have been. I do run courses for parents, but I do not always get it right. So ask my daughter. Some of you know her. You can ask her and she will tell you, no, my dad doesn't always get it right. It's one thing knowing all the theory, but putting that into practice is another matter completely. So I'm going to try and cover quite a lot tonight because of the wide age range. And because I didn't know what age, you know, that your children would be, I'm going to try and give some specific advice for those of you who maybe have infants and toddlers or teenagers. So I'm going to start by looking at the worry that parents have who have children who are in those transition years, sort of towards the end of primary school and moving into post-primary school. Now, this will hopefully be relevant to you all at some point in your lives. So the main worries that parents have around this time of transition would be alcohol, drugs, crying, truancy. What happens if they get involved in those sorts of things? So I want to just share with you some research, first of all. So starting off with, you would all know what causes heart disease. Poor diet, smoking, cholesterol, drinking too much alcohol, all those things. And so you know how to protect against that by making sure that you do have your five pieces of fruit, you're getting your exercise, you're reducing your stress triggers. So the same way as we know what the causes or the predictors of heart disease are, we also know the predictive strategies to try and prevent that. So because of that, we also know how to influence our children's development. And so that's really what I want to look at for the first few minutes of the talk. So we're going to look, first of all, at risk factors. And risk factors, they really exist within the four categories of community, school, individual, and the family. The more risk factors there are, the greater the risk. So it's a cumulative thing. So I don't want you to worry tonight if you identify a risk factor that, oh, that's my son, that's my daughter, and panic. It is about looking at the cumulative effect. If there are lots of risk factors within your family, within your son or daughter's life, then I would begin to worry. Many of the risk factors that we identify for alcohol and tobacco and other drug use are predictive of other problem behaviours such as school dropout, crime, teenage pregnancy. The good news, however, is that protective factors may buffer the exposure to risk. So let's just look, first of all, at risk in the community. What are the risks within the community? Well, if alcohol or other drugs are available within that community, then that is a risk. Now, in some communities, you will find that alcohol is freely available, and if people are walking down the street, they'll see some young people having their carry out on Friday or Saturday night, and they'll be saying, oh, that's grand, at least they're not doing drugs, that's okay. So they will turn a blind eye to that. In others, you'll find that it is the norm over the weekend, maybe Friday night and Saturday, that parents will actually go out and buy the drug cocktails for their children because they want to ensure that they're getting good or safe drugs. They don't want to get something that's mixed up with other stuff that might kill them. It is ironic, but that becomes a norm within that particular community. And that would be within the Belfast area. Transitions in mobility. Children who move school a lot, who maybe through divorce or relocation or death of a loved one, or because dad, maybe he has to change jobs, so that particular child is changing school, those transitions would be risks as well. And poverty and deprivation would be risk. So within the school, it's things like early and persistent antisocial behaviour. Somebody in the playground who's picking on others, who's trying to get their lunch money, who's trying to take their wee cards off them, the wee cards that they swap. Maybe nowadays it's their phone or, you know, various other things like that. Academic failure starting in primary school. Children maybe who are being left behind a little bit, they find that, yeah, I'm not really good at that math stuff, or I'm not so good at doing those comprehensions. So if they begin to feel that school's not really for them, they're going to try and, they'll be waking up in the morning, "Mom, I have a sore tummy today. I have a sore head. I don't want to go to school today." And so they're going to find ways to not be there. They're not really committed to school, so they start to abscond from school. Now, if they start to abscond from school, particularly if they're slightly older, who are they going to be with? Who are they going to mix with? Other people who are absconding? And what are they getting involved in? So that's why it becomes a risk. Within individuals, always do this. So within individual risk factors are children who feel alienated who are quite rebellious or aggressive. That might be at home, could be at school as well. They feel unvalued. So maybe they've done a nice piece of work, they've drawn some nice piece of artwork in school. Nobody noticed at home. Maybe they did well in the maths test. Nobody asked them how they did in their maths test. Maybe they won some cup or they did well, but nobody came to see them performing or participating in the cricket or whatever it was they're interested in. So they just feel nobody cares about me, nobody values me. Probably the most reliable predictor would be if that young person is hanging around with young people who are also engaging in the antisocial behaviour, the alcohol, the drugs, the crime. And if they have favourable attitudes to alcohol and drugs, probably you would notice that through what they're listening to, the music, the things that they're watching on television or YouTube, the friends they hang around with. If they have favourable attitudes to alcohol and drugs, well, that's going to influence them. And the younger someone is, when they begin to drink alcohol, the more likely it is to become a problem, or the more likelihood is that if they started drinking alcohol and got a wee kick out of that, then somebody, their inhibitions will be lowered, so somebody can then offer them something else stronger that they might take. So within the family, if there's a family history of addiction, if there's a poor family management of problems, so for instance, there are unclear rules and expectations in that family in terms of what time they should be home from school, what time they should be home if they go out, what time's tea, what are the rules in terms of chores and things like that. There's a lack of praise and nurturing from an early age if they're not nurtured and loved and cared for. But even as they get older, they're not praised for those little things that they do and the contributions that they make. They soon give up. If there's poor supervision, so when they go out to play, nobody really knows where they go. Nobody knows who they're playing with, don't know who their friends are. And the expectations in terms of what time to come in, well, it doesn't really matter. They can come in at all times. They're usually running the street. If the punishment within the family is inconsistent or harsh, if there's a lot of family conflict, mom and dad yelling at one another, maybe older brothers and sisters yelling at one another, those elevated noise levels would be risk factors. And if parents have positive attitudes to alcohol and drugs or crime, that will rub off on the children. And unfortunately nowadays, broken family structure is a risk factor. Particularly, I suppose, where it's usually mum nowadays who gets custody of the children, and there's a loss of contact for dad, and that is a big influence on the children when dad doesn't have that, regular contact with the children. Unclear rules about alcohol and drugs. If there is alcohol in the house, what are the rules around that? If there's a drinks cabinet, is that just open for the children just say, "Oh right, that's where the Coke and the Lilt and whatever it is," and so they just go and, you know, it's just another thing, it's another drink, so they'll try that, they'll sample it. If you've never talked to your children about alcohol, then that would be an issue. Children, you need to be clear with children in terms of what the rules are around these things. Low parental involvement in children's lives is just not noticing their efforts. We've really, I suppose, just mentioned that. Not involved in family decision-making processes. And there's just a lack of doing enjoyable things together. The family are all quite individual and isolated, and the family don't do stuff together. Not going on bike rides or going out on picnics or camping trips and things like that. So when you don't have that, then children are at risk. Older brothers and sisters can also be a problem. And children who feel their parents don't understand them. Now, I know that there'll be a lot of times they'll maybe say to you, "You don't understand, Mum. You don't understand, Dad." And that's fine. You probably all, I can see a few smiles here, you've probably all heard your children say that. But it's when that's constantly going on, when really you're not trying to understand. I know sometimes they'll give you a long story about something, and you're trying to follow that story, and it's really quite convoluted and difficult, but at least you're listening and you're trying to get an understanding of it. Well, at least that shows them you're trying to understand. So let's have a look at the protective factors, which is the good news. They buffer the exposure to risk. They are also cumulative. So the more, what I sometimes would do with a group of parents, I would get a big rope and I would get that child, little child in the middle, and I'd tell a story about the risk factors over here, and I'll get some parents pulling on the rope, and they'll pull the little child that way towards the risk. But then I'll start to build the protective factors on this side and get both, like I said, like a bit of a tug of war. But if you build the protective factors, that really offsets those risk factors. Okay? So if you can imagine that in terms of risk and protective factors. And the research does show that protective factors are significantly enhanced where parents are involved in their children's lives. Bonding and feeling connected. So bonding, the child feels bonded to the family. They feel bonded to their school. They feel bonded maybe to their church. That is a protective factor because they're going to those things. Healthy and consistent standards from the family. So they know where they stand. They know that there are rules in that family, and they know, the children know, oh right, this, my mum or dad wouldn't be happy with this. So they know the rules and the standards. The child themselves would have good coping skills no matter what they are faced with at school or with friends outside. They're able to cope with that because they're maybe able to come home and talk to their parents about it. They're resilient. So if you can imagine those big sort of plastic dolls, if you punch them, they fall to the ground, but they bounce back up. They've got bounce back ability. So children who are able to bounce back in the face of adversity, that is a protective factor. They have good problem-solving skills. So perhaps the parents, you know, they come home, they talk to their parents about an issue, and mum or dad is able to talk to through some options. So they then are able to go into school the next day. They have got the problem-solving skill to deal with some of those things, and they build that up over the months, over the years. And there's good communication within the family. So, for instance, wee Johnny's going out. Mum, I'm just away down to Paul's house. I'll be back at 9 o'clock. That's good. He's accountable and sort of self-managing. But good communication there. One of the issues that we find with parents is that there just isn't communication going on between them. They don't know what their children are doing or what they're watching or where they are. Alternative activities. Those children who are going to the football club or the cricket club, they go to dance or they go to scouts, they go to the church youth club. Children who are involved in alternate activities are going to be less likely to get involved in risk-taking behaviour. Why does this keep doing this? So you're the strongest single influence in your child's life. The fear of disappointing a parent when there's a close relationship is the biggest deterrent to risk-taking behaviour. The key bit to that phrase really is when there's a close relationship. There needs to be that close relationship where you're talking to them, listening to them, and spending time with them. This is a piece of research which was actually carried out by Professor Leiter and his wife, which I once had for dinner with a very interesting man. He's an American chap, but he and his wife were really looking at a group of young people who didn't drink alcohol, but yet all their peers did within, say, a school year. So they said, how come you guys don't, and yet there's a lot of peer pressure, and you're not succumbing to the peer pressure? So they said, well, actually, we feel, well, there are good bonds within our family. We're well connected to their church, connected to their youth club, their choir, their school, and they wouldn't want to let their school down. They didn't want to let their rugby team down because they were playing rugby every week. They didn't want to let their school down because they were really connected to their school. They also had aspirations for the future. They knew they wanted to be a lawyer, or they wanted to be a vet, or they wanted to be a secretary. Whatever it was, it didn't matter. They had a long-term aim or aspiration that they were looking for, and that these other things weren't going to get in their way and prevent them from achieving their goals. And they said that actually in their house there was rules and discipline, not discipline necessarily in terms of corporal punishment, but discipline in terms of routines. And those were the things they said that saved them. Now, I recently made some jam. You may not think this guy up here would be someone who would make jam, but we have a lot of plums in our garden, and this year was my first time to make plum jam. And if I can say so myself, it was very nice. It was delicious. It turned out very well. I decided to use some more of the plums and make some more jam a couple of weeks later. The second time, however, I did not stick closely to the recipe, and I boiled the fruit twice instead of only once. So the result was the jam had a slight burnt taste. Okay. Now, does anyone recognize this? John McNeil, you probably recognize that, do you? I bought my first car, it was a Vauxhall Chevette, many years ago. But I also bought one of these, which was a guide for servicing my car and keeping it in good working order. It told me what parts I would need and how to fit these to the car when required. In those days, I would have been lying underneath the car trying to fix my exhaust and trying to service the car myself. I don't do any of that now because it's all very electronic. But that's what I did back then because it was also didn't cost as much money. There was no point in me buying a manual for a Ford Escort or for a Volkswagen Beetle. It had to be a manual for a 1979 Chevette. Nowadays, the more modern car has lights to warn you when you need to put oil in it. It tells you that the brake pads need replacing. A beep will sound when the car needs to be serviced, but we still need to follow those warnings and act on them according to the manufacturer's specification. Now, it's perhaps not really such a disaster that I burnt the jam. Unless, of course, that we were inviting you round for morning coffee, scone and some plum jam. And it was the burnt jam that you were getting. But it gets a wee bit more serious when we don't stick to the car manual. And this could lead to maybe great expense or injury, maybe. So it's therefore essential that we follow the recipe or the car manual. So what about raising children, which is the subject we're here to talk about? It is often said that it is the only job we do for which there's no manual. When you leave hospital, they don't give you a manual. There is a manual, though, and it has been given us to us by the Creator himself, and it is the Bible. Robert's already mentioned this in his introduction. And tonight, I will be making reference to this book as I present some principles for parenting. God promises to honour those who honour him. In other words, when we follow his ways for ourselves and for our children, we would be less stressed because that's what he will promise. So let's have a wee look at what God says about parenting. Why does this keep sticking? Okay. Let me do it that way. So what does the Bible say? In Psalm 127, verse 3, it says that children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. So children are a gift from God. It is the Lord who decides what our children will be like. And in Psalm 139, and verses 13 and 14, David is speaking. And he says, "You knit me together in my mother's womb. I am fearfully and wonderfully made." God knows all about each one of us and each of our children, and he knows what makes them tick. He knows their personalities, their weaknesses, their strengths. He knows them better than we do. Proverbs 22 and verse 6, it says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." It is such a privilege to have a child to be able to train up in the way of the Lord. And I think I do think that nowadays the role of mother and father is not fully appreciated. Particularly mothers, I think that we underestimate the value of a mother in today's society, but I really do think it's crucial. So I was working with a 10-year-old boy recently, and every time I finished the session, he always said, "Thank you, Martin." I noticed that it was just really telling, because most other children don't, but he always said, "Thank you, Martin." His mum was not there prompting him. No, he just did it because that was how he had been brought up and taught to be mannerly. At the end of the 12 weeks, he said to me, "Martin, it's my birthday in 2 weeks' time, and I want to give you some money towards the work." So what we did was we bought a game, because when I go out to meet with the family, I might play a game of Jenga with them just to build that relationship with the child. So we went and bought some games that we would be able to use, and he knew that it was going to be used locally. But I just thought it was just lovely. He was just so mannerly, and yet he had so many issues. "Train up a child in the way he should go, and he will not depart from it." This becomes quite a difficult job nowadays, especially if both parents are out working and wanting time to do their own interests and going to the gym and meeting and socializing and all of that. It does take time and dedication to train up a child. Let me just read 2 Timothy. A small passage here, a short passage from 2 Timothy, verses 13 and 14. Maybe it's there as well. Let me just see. Chapter 3. "But you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. All Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete and thoroughly equipped for every good work." So here we have a young boy, an example of a boy who was taught the Scriptures from childhood. Timothy was taught and he knew the Scriptures. All these Scriptures came from God, and they were good for correction and instruction in what are the right things in life. It also equipped him for every good work. Timothy was just like any other wee boy of his time. He would have been naughty and left to his own devices. He would have got into trouble, been disobedient to his parents. He might have told lies, tried to exert his will on others, and been stubborn. I can remember stealing things from school when I was in P1. I was 4 years of age, and I used to come home with things, and my mum would say, "Where did you get that from?" "Oh, the teacher was throwing, she was clearing out her store." So I was able to come up with these lies at 4 years of age. So where did that come from? So I had the capacity to do that. I believe, and the Bible very clearly says, that the reason that I was able to do that was because of sin. And it also says in the Bible, we have all sinned and come short of God's standard. So what is sin? It is, if I can just find my place, it is disobedience towards God. In Psalm 51 and verse 5, the writer David says how his mother conceived him in sin. In other words, he was born a sinner. David knew that he started life on this earth as a sinner. Likewise, Timothy. But as he was taught by his mother and grandmother, he realized the truth of the Bible. He was a sinner and needed God to save him from the penalty for his sin. He asked God to forgive him and believed that Christ Jesus died on the cross for his sin. He was made wise for salvation, as it says in Timothy. These are truths we need to learn ourselves and also to teach them to our children. In Deuteronomy 6, verses 1, 2, 6, and 7, which is a favourite passage of mine when it comes to thinking about what we need to be teaching our children. The context of this is just as the children of Israel are about to move into their new land. And let me just read the four verses. Now, this is the commandments. This is God speaking to the children of Israel. Now, this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. And then verse 6, and these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. So this is what God commanded the parents of children to do way back then, and that is still relevant to us today. Diligently in your house, while you're out walking, teach them God's ways and God's laws. It also said to teach them in the morning, teach them in the evening. If we go back to the picture of that beautiful little boy, I'm not going to bring it up, but the little boy in the very first picture I showed you, if he was left to his own devices, what do you think might happen? Well, in Proverbs 29 it says, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Correct your child and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. That's a picture of a well-behaved child. A delight. Is this not what we want? There's no sign of stress there. And that's what Proverbs is full of little nuggets that you can find about raising your children. Just little things that you can teach them. Just little two sentences usually, just like that. So a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Correct your child and he will be a delight to your soul. It's a bit like indoor bowls. I don't know whether any of you play indoor bowls or carpet bowls or grass bowls, whatever you want to call it. But the first time you ever try to get that bowl down there to the other end, it's going to go off that way or it's going to go off that way. And I remember as a young boy thinking, what's going on here? Why did it go that way? Why did it go that way? I had no idea until someone explained to me that there is a bias in that bowling ball. So it needs to be corrected. In order for you to get it where you want it, it needs to be corrected. So sin is the bias in our lives. It's really our default position. And we need to deal with the bias. There's only one answer to the bias, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ. He died on the cross so that our sins could be dealt with once and for all. But the thing we must do is ask God for forgiveness and to trust Christ. There's a few more things that I want to mention to you. It does mention in Proverbs 1, verse 8, that both mum and dad ought to be involved in this process. Hear, my son, your father's discipline, and forsake not your mother's teaching. I'm sure you remember, maybe when you were growing up, you know, just wait till your father gets home. And so the wee boy, mum couldn't really do anything because always had to wait for father to get home. But actually, that little boy should be respecting and obeying his mother as much as his father. So that's an important thing that God says that children shouldn't be forsaking the law and the rules and teaching of their mothers either. They need to be adhering to mothers as well as those fathers. God expects children to be equally relevant to mum and to dad. And know their friends. There are a number of issues, a number of verses in the Bible. Proverbs 13, verse 20 is one. Who is it that your children are mixing with? Know their friends. Teach them about the qualities of friends so that they're not in with a group of fools or a group who are taking them down a line of crime or getting involved in alcohol or whatever it would be. So teach them about friendship. Help them to realize what they need to be a good friend as well. So train up a child. These are some things that I've noticed down through the years that I think are really important, that would just help reduce stress building up over the years. The first thing is house rules. Children operate far better when there are good, consistent boundaries. Be firm. You're in charge. The number of houses that I would go out to, or some of my colleagues would go out to, it's the child who's in charge. They're afraid to say anything to the child in case the child has a tantrum. They forget that they are the parent, that they're in charge. So that just doesn't happen overnight. That is built up over time. So they're sort of walking in eggshells around this child in case there's a full-on tantrum. So maybe have those rules, have a few rules, be firm about it, give them some reasons why that's a rule. Not just because I say so, but you know, there must be a reason for that rule, for their safety, for safety of other people. So rules, I mean, again, I think that it's good just to maybe have those rules up on a fridge, maybe just with a fridge magnet, just a few rules up there that they can see. For younger children, little drawings and things like that, showing the toys being tidied away or whatever it is, and then you can use words as they get a little bit older. Okay, routines. One of the key things that we would be working with most families, when you go out with them, it's about getting good routines. So whether that's a morning routine, or bedtime routine, or meal routines, or when they get a little bit older, a routine around homework. These are the times that tend to cause, if I was going out and doing an assessment with a family, I would usually ask, what's your morning routine like? What happens when they get up? What happens at nighttime, at bedtime? What happens around mealtime, and what happens around homework? Because those are the times when there'll be the most stress, because maybe mum or dad, whoever's doing the cooking, is trying to do that. Child is then not getting the attention they want, and so they start to kick off. So if you get those right, that reduces the stress levels. Routines will bring order and make well-worn pathways in the brain. So let's say you go out for a walk in the forest, or you go for a walk, well, you probably wouldn't be going for a walk in the jungle, but let's say you were, and you walk through that, you will tramp the grass down. Now, if you never go back, the grass will grow up and you'll never notice where the path was. But if you go back the next day or the next week and you keep going back, that path, that grass will begin to wear. Eventually, you'll get a little muddy path, maybe. Maybe somebody goes along on their bike along that path. So that path becomes established until it becomes a highway, maybe with cars driving through it. That then is memorable. If you go for that walk along that road, it's no problem. You know exactly where you're going. Well, that's exactly the same for a child. If you make and establish that pathway in their brain, then they will remember. If they know what's expected of them in the morning, what's expected of them in the evening or mealtime, what time mealtime's at, it becomes automatic to them because that pathway is there in their brain. I can still remember my mum saying that once it starts to get dark, it's time for you to come in. And I used to love it when the clocks changed because then I thought, I'll get an extra hour out to play. For some people, it was they'll say, when you see the streetlights coming on, it's time to get in. So mum didn't have to be out looking and trying to find me because I knew it was time to be in when the lights started to drop. So that there was obviously a well-established pathway in my brain that's still there. I still remember that rule. I just want to talk a wee bit about screen time. This is a big issue just for us now when we're going out to visit homes. I would limit the use of screens, especially at nighttime. A lot of my work focuses on helping parents to reclaim all the time the children are spending on screens, because I need it, Mum. I just need to be on my game. I need my iPad. I need my whatever it is. Monitor internet use. What I would suggest is no screens 1 hour before bedtime, because this will promote better sleep. I had a boy who was 12, I think it was. He was in second year. And mum was having some problems with him. He was going to bed, but he wasn't really getting to sleep. He was waking up the next morning. He was really grouchy, and she couldn't get him to wash or have a shower or anything. So I came in and asked him, so what's your evening routine? He says, well, I'll be out playing until about 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I come in then, have some supper, go to bed, and he says, I would have my phone and would be on YouTube. And I said, well, you're not going to like what I'm going to say. He says, you're not going to win this argument. I said, well, the research would say that I will win it, because the research says that blue light that you're getting off your phone is actually preventing you to get sleep. But he said, I need that to get to sleep. So I said, what time are you getting to sleep at? He said, about 20 past 12. I said, well, it's obviously not working then, is it? So I said to Mum, you're going to have to be very firm. We need a rule at bedtime that at 8:30, you take the phone and it goes in a drawer. It's not in the bedroom. So I really didn't think that she would do it, actually. She was quite very loving, a very soft mum. I came back then the next week, and she said, two nights of full-on arguments where he just was refusing to give the phone. But by the third night, he gave her the phone. It went in a drawer. And by the end of, I think it was maybe out with him about 6 or 7 weeks, by the end of that, she said, Martin, it's been a transformation. He goes to bed. He gets to sleep. He's actually doing better in school. He is now waking up and he's going and having a shower. She just couldn't believe the difference that it made. So I really do, it's a wee bit of a hobby horse of mine, but I really do think that it is important. A lot of anxiety that we're finding with children is coming from watching inappropriate DVDs. They're watching stuff that is far, far beyond their age. Yeah, but all my friends are watching that. All my friends have that. This results in anxiety where they're watching stuff, scary movies. The little girl who told you who wouldn't go to the toilet, who wouldn't go to bed, that was because her dad, I said to her dad, do you watch scary movies in this house? And he said, we do, but she doesn't watch them. She's on her phone. And the next week I went back, he said, Martin, I was having to think about what you said. She is obviously taking that on board. So the whole thing was, you know, the damsel in distress going up to bed expecting somebody there waiting for her, or waiting for her in the toilets. So we had to do a whole piece of work to get her where she realized that it was all from watching the wrong stuff. I would suggest that you check out the content. So Grand Theft Auto, very popular, but it is not okay. It is pro-violence, it's pro-drugs, it's a lot of prostitution in it, and there's a very negative attitude towards women. It is certainly not something for anyone to be filling their minds with. But yet, I had a little boy of 6, and I said to him, I believe you're watching, and I mentioned, I can't remember what it was, some little children's show. He says, I don't like that show. I said, oh, right. What is it you? He said, do you want me to go and show you what I watch? So he came down with Assassins, which is I think it's a 15 maybe. And then he also brought down Grand Theft Auto. He was 6, and that's what he was playing. So I was all sort of, right, what happens in this? And just, you know, he was just digging this big hole for himself. And he said, well, there's a lot of violence in it, people getting killed. And I said, Grand Theft Auto? Oh, he said, yeah, there's a lot of people get killed in that. And you go to a strip club. He was 6. Now, Mum had no idea. I wasn't blaming Mum in one sense. She had no idea, because what he had actually done was he had gone with his game and swapped it with somebody else in school and came home with it. But you see, the whatever they played it on was up in the bedroom. So there was no monitoring of it. So I think that things like that, really, I don't think it's a good idea having them in the bedroom. I think it's better to have it in a public place. It's also good, you know, you're maybe not into the whole gaming thing. It's probably best if you sit down, can I play your game with you? And then you see if the content is appropriate. Although if it does say 18, it's not appropriate. It's 15, it's not appropriate. You know, so That's just a thing to mention to you. I have a lot of children and not sleeping at night because of Chucky, thinking that this doll was going to waken up in the middle of the night and come and kill her and kill the family. Just because she was only 9 when she watched something like that. So you really need to be looking at what the content of those things. TVs in the bedroom, not a big fan of that. I think it's a disaster. How do you monitor what they watch when they go to bed? Because they waken up, and particularly if they're going to bed, they'll come up with great stories and say, but I need to watch that to get to sleep. I need that for company. I need the sound of those voices to get to sleep. The TV puts me over to sleep. I would suggest you use audiobooks or something like that, not something with all the flashing lights, because their sleep's disrupted. They'll waken up at 4 o'clock, TV will go on, or the internet will go on, or whatever it is, and they're watching that while parents are asleep. So, what do children need to learn? Ephesians 6, verses 1 to 3 says they need to learn to obey their parents. They need to learn to honor their father and their mother, that it may be well with you. The first commandment with promises, one of the 10 commandments, the first commandment with a promise. In other words, if you honor your parents, things will go well with you. What does it mean to honor? Well, the Greek which says that it means to revere, to prize, or to value. So to prize, revere, or value your parents. And honor is not only given because the parent merits it. You don't only get that honor because you deserve it. You get it because of your rank and who you are. And that, again, is the model that God has given us. Proverbs 1 and verse 8 says there, hear the instruction of their father and mother. They need to listen to the instruction of father and mother. If a child grows up honoring you, they will honor and respect those in authority, such as teachers. Again, a lot of the issues we have are somebody who just stands up to the authority of the teacher. But if they're honoring you and respecting you, then they will also respect their teachers, the police, their employers. And notice that both mum and dad are involved in this. I've already mentioned about the whole friendship, their friendship groups and knowing who their friends are. So what is some good practice? When your child is just a baby, maybe I'll just mention this first of all. Be informed about social media, about Facebook, and all of those things. There are good books around. There are good people who give talks about social media. Social media sites change all the time, so you need to sort of keep one step ahead or at least one step behind, not 20 steps behind. Because, for instance, say your child sets up Facebook and you say, I need to be your friend on Facebook. That's okay, Mum. That's okay, Dad. You can do that. But they set up another alternative Facebook site where they do all the rest of the stuff. They have this wee one here to keep Mum and Dad happy, but they have another one over here which, you know, goes on and they do all the other stuff on. There are lots of others as well, and some of them are not pleasant. I don't even want to mention them. Bringing them to Sunday school or to church, be ready to apologize when you make a mistake. We do make mistakes. Apologize to your children. Because that shows them that you make a mistake, but it also shows you're big enough to say, I'm sorry about that, I made a mistake. Pray with them. Pray for their salvation. They need to be saved as well. They are sinners. Using learning moments and being ready to talk. I don't suggest that you go home tonight and say, right, that man said we need to talk to you. Can you sit down? We need to talk. Don't do it like that. You need to be ready to talk when they're ready to talk. So, for instance, that might be when Dad is underneath the car fixing exhaust or out putting up a fence or cutting the grass or whatever it is. That might be when his son might come and talk to him about something. For you mums, it might be when you're taking your daughter out somewhere, you're going shopping, you're in the car, there's no eye to eye contact. That's more likely going to be when they will talk about something, not face on. Or it might be you're watching something on television and it's in the ads because they knew. There's only 3, 4, 5 minutes when, you know, you're not going to be bombarded with questions because you're going to back in the Great British Bake Off or whatever it is you're watching. So learning moments are just when those moments arise, when something happens. Maybe it is an ad on television. I used to tell parents about, you know, the ad about Red Bull, it gives you wings. Well, does it really give you wings? Does it really make you fly? Is it really giving you energy? No, it's not actually. It's just making you hyper because it's the caffeine. It's not energy. It's caffeine that's making the child hyper. Do this. Okay. When your child is just a baby, how attentive to him or her are you? Those first few weeks and months are crucial to your children's development and attachment. It is a bit like turning on the Bluetooth when you tune in to, you know, your phone in the car or whatever it is. Once the mom and baby are paired, the baby will download so much from you. How to deal with stress. So how you deal with stress, they're learning that. How to keep calm, how to love, how to self-soothe. Touch and play are crucial to your children's development. They will learn their vocabulary, how to take turns, how to make sense of the world. They will learn about colours, early math, self-regulation, planning. You bring order rather than chaos to them. But imagine if you're on your phone and you're walking down the street, checking out your latest post on your phone, on Facebook. What message are you giving to your child? Hold on. And then they ask you again, Mummy, hold on a minute. So what is that saying? It's really saying, well, you're not really that important to me. This is more important to me. My Facebook, my friends, that's much more important to me. I'm working with a family at the minute, a little boy who's in P5, and he's very dramatic. He refuses to go into class. He spends about two and a half hours every morning, big drama. I'm not going into class, clinging to his mum, clinging to the school railings, trying to be persuaded by mum and dad to go into class. I spoke to mum about what she models in front of her son, and she told me that she always had difficulties controlling her emotions. Even small things became a drama. She exaggerated everything. She was telling me one night her son said, can I have some cereal? And she was, I don't have any milk. I mean, I'm going to have to put you in the car. I'm going to have to get your dad. You know, it was all a big drama just over a pint of milk. And no, can you not just have toast? So last week she told me that he had a much better week. And I said, well, how were you? She said, well, I was much more self-controlled and I can see that it has rubbed off. And that was so instant, that Bluetooth connection. It was just quite amazing. I'm not going to ask you to do this because we're running out of time, but if you get time at some point, do this experiment at home with somebody. I want one of you to be A, one of you to be B, and I want A to start talking about something to B, and just your hobby, some wee thing that you're interested in. I want you to talk for 1 minute, and at the end of that minute, I want B to switch off. I want B to start looking at their phone, looking around, looking at their watch, no eye contact, and see what it's like for A. And then after 45 seconds of that, I want B to come back in and see the difference and see what that feels like. I have done it and it is amazing, just to see what that's like. That's what it's like for a child who's being ignored as a parent is walking down the street on Facebook or even in the house on Facebook, whatever it is they're doing. They just begin to feel that they don't really matter. So I'm going to finish with that. But if you feel that after the chat that we've had tonight that you wanted a wee bit of extra help, I will be around tonight. I'm not going to have a question and answer session because of just the sort of the personal nature of issues that people might bring up, but I will be here at the front, and so if you want to chat about anything, if you have more more pressing or serious issues, you can go to your GP, and you can get a referral to the family support hub, and the family support worker would then go out and meet with you perhaps for 12 weeks or meet with your child if it was some work with your child. There's also an early intervention support scheme. So there's some of those leaflets sitting over there as well. You can self-refer to those. So they're sitting over here just beside the table. You can self-refer to those. Again, that's like a family support, and they would make an assessment and go out and give you some help. So there's some of those out there. Some of you, I don't know, again, you may have a child who's autistic or query autism or maybe ADHD. There are lots of specialist support groups out there like Autism NI or others, and you'll find those on the website. They are based locally. They do have support group meetings where they meet, maybe in coffee shops and that. We also have a bookstall, which I think Robert's going to mention, and so you can go. We have some good literature there. I also did have, where is it? These here. Again, if you have teenagers, this is a little bit like the risk and protective factor stuff that I spoke to at the beginning. This is a booklet just taking you, it's very readable, but it's more geared for the sort of 10 to 14-year-olds about family rules, about protective factors, risk factors, using I statements. So practical stuff, but as I say, it is really for 10 to 14-year-olds. So there are some of those over there. Feel free to take those. Okay, I noticed that there's going to be a little cup of tea, and there it is. So, thank you very much for listening, and I'll hand back to Robert.